I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke.
Okay, so we just wanted to start off this week with a little thank you. We frequently, shamelessly beg for ratings and reviews from all of our lovely listeners, and there's been some really lovely comments. I'm looking on the Apple Podcast app, and I know these aren't people's real names, so I'm just going to read out your little username, and I'm presuming you'll know who you are. So we had our most recent one was from Nick76 with two exclamation marks. They're very excited. Thank you very much. Apparently we're very personable, Joanna. So that's good. You could put that on your CV if you want to, I reckon.
Nice. I'll think about it.
Good. People do like the chat, which is nice because I think it's one of those things that people are either really for or really against. You know, they want a podcast that either the hosts have a bit of banter, a bit of interaction, or they just want to hear the gory details, the straight up facts. But we really appreciate when everyone says that they like hearing us, you know, interact with each other and have a bit of conversation, because obviously we are friends. So hopefully you can tell that during the cases that we cover. The next one is from Piccalilies, who loves hearing about cases local to Scotland, and they enjoy the other true crime recommendations that we give, which is good. The next one is 123 Anom, who knows all about internet security and is not letting their identity be known to anyone. But they like the friendship between us, which is really cute. Fiona Daisy likes the mixture of chat and interesting less known cases. Jill from Crime Divers, which is another Scottish podcast, if anyone's interested, loves our accents, unsurprisingly, and is looking forward to listening to more episodes. So that's super cute. And the last one that's showing on my app just now is from Katie Kent. And Katie has totally binged all of the episodes available in a fortnight, which is amazing and definitely the kind of thing that I do. So yes, Katie, I'm there with you, been there.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that's super impressive, and it makes it all worthwhile. So thank you so much, guys. We really do appreciate it. Keep them coming, and you can always reach out to us. Obviously we leave the details at the end of the show notes, but you know, just hit us up on social media or send us an email and we will get back to you.
Absolutely. And if you want to leave a 5-star rating or review, if you've enjoyed our podcast or if you have been enjoying it, then please feel free to go ahead and leave that on your favorite podcast platform of choice. Obviously we don't get paid for what we do, so your ratings and reviews help us to be noticed and to spread the word and just get us out there, basically. So every rating and review helps,
and they make me squeal happily, and I screenshot them and send them to Joanna.
Hi, true crime fans. I'm Erin.
And I'm Shay. We host All Crime, No Cattle, a conversational podcast which focuses on true crime stories from the Lone Star State.
We strive to bring you a balanced and well-researched story about Texas cases big and small.
We do the research so you don't have to.
We also end every episode with a good news story, just to remind everyone that real life isn't quite as depressing as true crime can make it out to be.
New episodes drop every Thursday, and you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. All Crime, No Cattle, because crime is bigger in Texas, y'all.
All right, Emma, do you want to kick us off with your case this week?
I do. Okay, so this case I decided to cover. I had heard of the case, but it was brought back to my attention and kind of brought back to the public eye, I would say, by the recent tragic murder of Sarah Everard, which has obviously been widely publicised. It's the case of Moira Jones, and it has similarities to Sarah's case, despite happening in 2008. And it also highlights the danger that many people, women particularly, can feel just from walking alone outside, and just, you know, highlights some of the issues that a lot of my contemporaries and women that I know and people that I know have spoken about sexual violence towards women and not feeling safe in the world that we live in sometimes. So yeah, I wanted to cover this case. It is important, and yeah, I hope you find it interesting. On a Thursday morning, the 29th of May, 2008, a park ranger found the partially clothed body of Moira Jones in Queen's Park, face down behind a bush. There were business papers, toiletries, and other personal items scattered around the scene. Moira's identification wasn't in these possessions, so when the police attended the crime scene, they managed to use invoices they found to confirm that the body was that of 40-year-old Moira Jones, a sales executive for a soft drink company who lived in a tenement flat on Queen's Drive, which overlooks the park that she was found in. Moira had lived in Glasgow since 2003, though she was originally from Staffordshire in England. She was the eldest child of Beatrice and Hugh Jones, and she was big sister to her brother Grant. On the Moira Fund website, she's described as, quote, warm and smiling, vivacious, intelligent and stylish, unquote. People say that she had a great sense of humour and was very popular. She loved to travel, she was successful in her job, and she loved living in Glasgow. Apparently, she loved the banter and just the warmth of the people. It was particularly sad that this would be where she met her end. When investigating officers processed the scene, it became clear that Moira had been victim to a sustained and brutal attack. She had 65 injuries to her body. She'd been beaten, stamped on, struck. She'd had her neck compressed, and she'd been sexually assaulted. Intimate swabs provided a full DNA profile, and the absence of semen outside the body confirmed that Moira had been deceased or unconscious when the sexual assault took place. This was actually really important, as it meant that if they could match the DNA to an individual, that person couldn't claim that Moira had been murdered by someone else and that they had consensual sex with her prior to that, because the body had not moved after the sexual intercourse had taken place. The night before Moira had been found, she had been at her boyfriend's house, but she'd left following an argument with him. She'd driven back to her own flat and parked her Toyota RAV4 on the street around about 11:30 p.m. It was at this point that she was abducted. Police studied CCTV footage, and it was to emerge that there was footage of Moira's attacker from an unlikely source. It was from a local bus. The footage captures petite Moira being forced to walk across the road and along the perimeter of the park, with a very tall male appearing to have hold of her, and he also had hold of her handbag. A witness later said that they saw a couple near the tennis courts, where the police later found buttons from Moira's blouse and a cigarette butt, which had DNA matching the suspects on it. There were also reports that people heard screams around about this time, and a taxi driver said to his partner, "If there's been a murder, we've just heard it," which just makes your blood run cold. Moira's body was found in the centre of the park, which was more than 300 metres away from where the buttons were found and the cigarette butt. The CCTV also captured the suspect leaving the park around about 2:15 a.m. He had a really distinctive swagger, and he was also seen to discard a laptop. There was pretty much a huge manhunt straight from the get-go. They had a look at any known sex offenders living in the area. They did public appeals, they did door-to-door inquiries, and as I said, they scoured CCTV and just basically did everything that they could. But they actually got their break on the 12th of June. There was a Czech woman living in a bedsit close to the park, and she contacted them to tell them that a man named Marek Harkar. He was 6'3" and 32 years old, and he was a Slovakian national. He had come to stay with her for a few days in the run-up to the murder, and then he left just after the murder. The Czech woman was called Lucy Pechlova. I hope I haven't mispronounced that. And she told police that she'd met Marek through work the previous year in Liverpool. So Marek Harkar arrived in Glasgow on the 18th of May to visit Lucy, and he spent his time drinking heavily and watching pornography in her bedsit, which she wasn't very happy about. Lucy also told police that Marek had made several sexual advances towards her, which she had repeatedly rebuffed. Around about 10 o'clock in the evening on the 28th of May, Marek, who was a former soldier and a kickboxing enthusiast, left the bedsit, telling Lucy that he was going to look for a woman and that he needed a woman. And then he returned at around 3:15 the following morning. He left on the 1st of June and left all his belongings behind and went back to Slovakia very suddenly. Lucy packed the possessions that he'd left in the bedsit and just threw them in a cupboard in case he ever, I presume in case he ever wanted them or came back for them. She did an interview with The Sun, and I'll read out her quotes from this. Quote, "He smashed a door as he came in, and that woke me up. I was scared. On his way out, he'd already been drunk, and he'd had more to drink. He started yelling that I should stop telling him what to do, or he would kill me. I was afraid he would become violent. I wanted to call the police, but I was scared he would kill me. When I heard that a body had been found, I thought to myself, I wouldn't be very surprised if he was involved. I'd never have thought he was capable of something like that before then. After that night, he stayed at home. He didn't speak. He looked stressed. After 3 days, he went back to Slovakia." End quote. After Lucy contacted the police, they went and gathered the belongings from the bedsit, and they sent them to a forensic lab, and there was particular attention paid to a black and white duvet that he had used, and there was two stains on it. On the 14th of June, the lab results came back, and the DNA on the duvet matched the profile found on Moira's body. 3 days later, the Crown Office obtained a European arrest warrant and they sent it over to the Slovakian authorities. So there was a manhunt in Slovakia, and within 24 hours, Harkar was arrested hiding in a house in a rural village in Nalepkovo in the Košice region. When they arrested him, they also searched the house that he was found in, and they took several items from that home as well. Among the items that they recovered was a black leather jacket, which is the one believed to have been wearing on the night that Moira's murder took place. And they later found that there were tiny specks of Moira's blood on the jacket. They also recovered a digital camera, which was found to have belonged to Moira Jones. They extradited him back to the UK after roughly 4 weeks. So on the 16th of July, Marek Harkar arrived back into the UK. Marek was charged with Moira's murder, and despite maintaining his innocence, he was jailed for life with a minimum of 25 years that he must serve before being considered for parole. He was convicted for the rape and the murder of Moira Jones, and he was also convicted for trying to pervert the course of justice for fleeing to Slovakia. When he was sentencing him, Lord Bracadale told him that his crime had shocked the nation. He said, quote, "Moira Jones was a hard-working woman who, after a day of meetings and some socialising, made her way home after 11 p.m. Near home, she encountered you and her fate was sealed. You had consumed a large amount of alcohol and declared your intention to seek a woman. You abducted Moira Jones and took her into Queen's Park. There, in the most disturbing way, you held her captive in a holly bush before taking her further into the park, where you inflicted extensive injuries to her head and neck, raped and murdered her, leaving her half-naked body lying in the bushes. Your conduct that night reflects a level of wickedness very rarely encountered. End quote. So the judge actually recommended that Harker be deported after his release. I read in various sources online that he has, prior to being released, he's actually been moved to a jail in Slovakia. He is still under the same level of supervision. He's still under the same level of supervision that he would have been here, and he will still serve the same amount of sentence, but he has been moved to Slovakia on his own wishes. He actually had 13 previous criminal convictions, and 4 of those involved violence, which just blows my mind that he was even able to do this. But nevertheless, he has been convicted. He is serving his time in jail at the moment. Moira's family set up the Moira Fund in her memory. It's a charity which helps other families who've suffered bereavements due to violence. Moira's mother, Beatrice, who is known as Bea, kept a journal following the murder, and in 2020 she appeared in a BBC documentary about Moira's case. It's called The Dark Shadow of Murder. In the documentary, she reads excerpts from these journals, and they are heart-wrenching. They are raw, they're beautifully written, and it's actually amazing that this woman is able to share her feelings at the time and her feelings since then, and just her processing her grief with everyone. It's really quite phenomenal. Recently, Bea has written an open letter to the parents of Sarah Everard in the light of her murder. She's expressing her support in this most awful of times. She emphasises that the family needs to be protected from media intrusion, and that the focus should be always on Sarah and not her murderer. I think the thing that I will have really struck home for me, and probably many other women who live their lives fairly normally, is Sarah and Moira both had their partners. You know, they were just living their lives, professional women, sociable, bubbly, socialising, just doing what they needed to do. In Moira's case, she'd driven herself home. She was very close to her home, and someone abducted her from right outside her car. In Sarah's case, same thing. She was walking a well-lit route home at a time that most of us would presume would be fairly safe to walk home, and these two separate men have intercepted these women and taken their lives in the most awful way imaginable. So I just find it really important to talk about. And yeah, I just wanted to see what your take on it was as well. But that is the case of Moira Jones.
That was really interesting. I don't remember hearing about that. Although to me, 2008 doesn't seem like that long ago, I guess. Actually, it is. Time goes by a lot quicker than you think. Yeah, I mean, obviously, with Sarah Everard's murder, you know, we've seen things in the press, people saying, why was she walking out at this time, whatever. I just can't with that. Like, I just can't.
Yeah.
To me, it's just victim blaming. That's long and short of it. Sometimes people have to be out at certain times, you know, for whatever reason, whether you choose to or whether you have to for work or whatever. The point is that you should be safe from predators, and victim blaming doesn't help anyone, you know. And we're all aware that, you know, sometimes going out after dark and things like that, there is a risk if you're a more vulnerable member of society. We get that. But as soon as the finger starts being, you know, pointed at the victim, it's not helpful to anyone. And it just doesn't contribute to an actual useful conversation about how to prevent this kind of thing. Kind of as well, it's a little bit deflating because obviously I covered the case of the Yorkshire Ripper, which, you know, that case happened in the 1970s. And, you know, women were marching in Leeds at that time. You know, it was like sort of over 5 years that he had this hold over Yorkshire and, you know, terrified people basically.
You just wonder, how far have we come, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, well, they were marching for women's rights to walk whatever time, whether it's dark or not. You know, in the winter, it can be dark at 5 o'clock at night. You wouldn't shame somebody for being out at 5 o'clock at night, you know? It's just, we just need to get past that. You think, well, this conversation was being had in the 1970s and women were marching for this very purpose, and we're in 2021 and a woman's been attacked through absolutely no fault of her own. And there are people that are saying, well, what was she doing walking at 9 o'clock at night in London?
Yeah.
You know, just don't even go there, you know. And it doesn't matter whether you're a woman or a man, or, you know, you have a right to your own freedom and you have a right to your own safety.
It massively
as well.
Complicates the situation that there are so many good people out there, no matter what gender they identify with. And, you know, people that identify as male can be really upset by the fact that women can be nervous or feel intimidated or threatened by men that they don't know. I will happily put my hands up and say that, yeah, if I'm walking down a road and it's just me on the road and I look back and there's a man walking behind me, I'm nervous immediately. I don't know if he's safe or not. I'm not presuming automatically that he's not safe. But I have to be aware.
You're just keeping your wits about you. Yeah. You know, that's the thing men have to understand. Until you've been in that situation, you can't understand. You know, it's like the argument about, you know, racism and things. Unless you've been on the receiving end of that, you don't get it. You can try, you can be an ally, mm-hmm. and you can really try and educate yourself, but you don't know because you've never experienced it. And, you know, it's a similar thing with women's safety. You know, I don't live in a safe place. And if I'm walking alone at night, which, you know, I try not to do if I don't have any reason to. In fact, to be honest, even during the day, you know what I mean? It doesn't even have to be at night. Like, I don't live in a safe place. So if somebody's walking behind me and I feel that they're too close or I feel uncomfortable, I'll literally just stop and move mm-hmm. to the side and pretend I'm looking for something in my bag, or, you know, I'm looking on my phone, or some reason that I'm stopping and moving aside and sort of turning around, you know, so I can see them pass me, you know, to get them past me, basically. And I'm really conscious as well of walking, you know, behind people, even if it's like elderly people, you know, if I'm walking too close, if I'm walking mm-hmm. too quickly, anything that might come across as intimidating.
But the very fact that you've developed that coping mechanism and that strategy is something that I honestly believe a lot of people, mostly men, I would say, haven't ever had to do. And, you know, I've had men say, well, men get attacked too, you're right. And overwhelmingly, the perpetrators of that are also men. Unfortunately, that is the world that we live in. I'm yet to, thankfully, I've never been made aware of a man being dragged into a bush by a woman and raped and murdered that I know of. Personally, I'm not saying it doesn't happen and it's never happened, but part of life, we've spoken about heuristics before, your brain learns connections based on past experiences, and it uses these shortcuts to try and protect you and try and keep you safe. So unfortunately, if you have been followed before, if you have been catcalled before, if you've been harassed in the street, if someone's rolled down their window and shouted at sexual anything at you, really, you learn from it. And unfortunately, it does tint your view of life. And I've never had a woman roll down her window and shout sexual obscenities at me. Not yet. Yeah. I absolutely want to reinforce that it's a small minority of men that do this. It absolutely is. But they ruin it. They ruin it for everyone else. And that's part of the problem.
Yeah. And the thing is as well, is like, that's a really important point about what you've said about catcalling, you know, and there's some men that will have the mentality that will say, well, you should take it as a compliment.
Degraded.
Being shouted at in the street and embarrassed, and sometimes degraded, and actually sometimes quite aggressively.
And they could just grab you and chuck you in their car. You don't know what someone's going to do. They might just be thinking, they're saying, oh, nice arse. And they go about their merry day thinking, oh, that's really good of me. I hope that woman's been uplifted. But for us, it's, oh my God, I can't even walk down the street without someone objectifying me. And is he a creep? Is he, you know, is he a rapist? Or, you know, is he... It could just be someone's dad. It could just be someone's friend or their husband or whatever. It could be anything, but I don't know. And that is the bottom line. I don't know. And I've got to protect myself. And unfortunately, that will make me more wary. So to the good guys out there, and I know there are so many of them out there, and a couple especially that listen to this podcast, I saw a lovely guy that went to school with Dave posting asking how he could make women feel more comfortable when he's out and about. And we so appreciate that. We really, really do.
Absolutely. And I think as well, it can be quite brave of a man, especially to post on social media, something like that, because I would expect that they might have quite a negative...
There was a bit of that.
Backlash as a result of that from some male friends. Sometimes in jest, maybe it might be in jest, whatever, but there might be some men that genuinely don't get it. But the point is that by educating yourselves and being aware of it, it absolutely helps women.
If you apply that to different parts of your life, which I try to do anyway. So if someone who is a person of colour tells me that they've experienced racism, I don't go, oh, really? Prove it. I don't believe you. You know, I've not lived that experience. I'm horrified to hear that it's happened, but I wouldn't turn around and go, oh, so a white person, well, not all white people feel like that, you know, and then make the conversation about me, because the conversation isn't about me.
Yes, it's like if somebody says, a person of colour says, you know, I've experienced quite a lot of racism. It's like you saying, well, I'm not racist. It's not about you.
It's not how that works. You know? And if they say that they feel uncomfortable in a situation, there's usually a reason for it. So it's a really, really difficult one. But I think, and do you know the thing that frustrates me more than anything? It's that these cases are socially acceptable to open up the conversation because they're white, attractive, professional women. Let's not make bones about this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, not everyone is afforded the respect and the understanding that these cases have been given, because there are lots of victims out there who maybe because of their profession, because of their colour, because of their age, because of where they were, because of what they were wearing, because of they were intoxicated, whatever it is, there's that, but was she blah? Was she doing X?
Oh, but they'd have been in trouble before. Oh, but they were a person of colour. Oh, but they were a sex worker.
Exactly. And unfortunately, it does take these supposedly acceptable victims, you know, they're the victim that the public wants to see. They're the victim that it's hard for someone to pick apart and degrade and find a reason that what's happened to them is acceptable in any way, shape or form, which it absolutely is not. And it's horrific that we have to use them as examples in conversation as if they're crime was any more worthy, or you know, their death was any more worthy than anyone else. It's absolutely deplorable, but it opens up a conversation, and it does open up a conversation that is needing to be had. And as horrendous as it is, I do honestly believe that there will always be evil in the world, and I do think that unfortunately the nature nurture debate, there will always be predators out there. But if there's any socialization that we can change, if there's any cultural aspects that we can change, then conversations like this are absolutely key in starting that process and bringing up people to understand how to be a decent human being.
Absolutely. And even people that aren't predators, raising the awareness and the education of people that aren't to recognize and identify certain behaviors and threats and risks will keep everyone much safer. Yeah.
And something that I do understand why people rail against, you know, about telling women, don't go out late at night, don't do this, don't do that. What I would say is, it's really, really, really shit that we have to give this advice to other human beings. But whilst we are still unsafe, I do think that some of it is valid advice. I do think that to say to your children, your daughters, your friends, people you care about, look, it's not a safe place out there. And if you are going to be out, you know, look around you, here's some tips. Try not to walk alone in the dark. Try and always be with a friend. Don't, like we've said before, don't leave someone alone in the club. Don't leave a friend alone with someone they don't know. Don't drink drinks that someone that's bought you. Don't leave your drink unattended. All these kind of things. It's a horrific fact that we have to do these things, but you do. And there was actually a really interesting piece of advice that I saw on Twitter the other day. And it was someone said to a woman, if a man comes and asks you for help when there are other people around, it's highly unlikely that he actually needs your help. If there's a, because of socialization, men are more likely to ask another man for help. And say it's something like physical, we know that for the most part, men are generally stronger than women. It's highly unlikely that you're going to be able to do something, you know, extraordinarily strong that he's going to need you specifically for. So 9 times out of 10, just trust your instincts. Why is this person asking you for help? Is it likely? I mean, it's literally back to the Ted Bundy thing, isn't it? And on another similar vibe to children, if an adult comes to you and asks you for help when there are other adults around, what help is there that a child could possibly give an adult that another adult that's in the vicinity couldn't give them? So it's just about reprogramming people and trying to think, question the motives. And I'm sure there are people out there with very, very valid motives and they're pure of heart. And that's not what they're trying to achieve at all. But yeah, I just think we need to ensure that we're all thinking with that mindset of trying to keep ourselves as safe as possible.
Absolutely. I completely agree. So do you want to hear a light-hearted true crime
story? Yes, please. That would be lovely.
Okay, so I've got a couple of little, they're just little short ones, but I'll read them out for you.
Okay.
This is from what looks like it's an excerpt from a newspaper. And look, there's like a timeline. And it says 8:28 a.m. A Lanphier Court woman said her son was attacked by a cat and the cat would not allow her to take her son to the hospital. Evil cat.
Oh, God. That is the
I've got another one for you. Again, it's an excerpt from a newspaper. A man reported that a squirrel was running in circles on Davis Drive and was not sure if it was sick or had been hit by a car. An officer responded, and as he drove on the street, he ran over the squirrel.
Oh, that is bad. Oh, no.
I've got another one for you. Police were informed February 25th by a resident of the 1000 block of Raritan Drive that a family in the area is taking over the minds of local dogs and turning them against their owners. Police were advised by the person that the only way to protect a dog is to install an anti-force field on its head before letting the animal go outside.
Oh, of course, yeah. What do you do? Put a tinfoil hat on it. What the heck? Who was the new neighbour? Was it Dr. Doolittle?
Who knows? I've got another one. A man who lives in Fairfield filed a complaint with police on Sunday about someone ringing his doorbell and leaving a photocopy of Buttocks on his front stoop. The complainant, Edgar Butts, told police the incident has happened several times in the past 2 weeks.
Oh, that's a shame.
Mr. Seymour Butts.
But also, that is your name, so yeah. Like, it is about it.
There you go.
I love it.
Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to leave us a rating and or review, as said earlier, please go ahead and do so on your favourite podcast platform of choice. You can also get in touch with us on socials, and if you want to contact us and give us a case recommendation, you can email us info@murdershespoke.net. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next week.